Volgens mij is het 12 uur. Ik heb geen klok die op dezelfde tijd loopt als een andere klok, dus ik begin gewoon. Welkom allemaal. Goedemiddag. Mijn naam is Henry Been. Ik werk bij Snelstart Software. Ik verwacht dat in de zaal twee mensen zitten die ooit van Snelstart gehoord hebben. Drie, zie ik. Vier. Over het onderwerp waar ik jullie vandaag iets over wil vertellen, heeft Microsoft gisteren ook een case study gelanceerd. En daar hebben zij een filmpje bij gemaakt. En dat wil ik graag met jullie delen. Om even in de stemming te komen.
Snelstart makes a line of business desktop application, providing software to do bookkeeping, invoicing and tax reports.
We have been delivering an application to our customers for years successfully. But one of the things our customers started demanding more and more was the ability to work anytime, anywhere.
We started into the cloud in 2010. That was when we had our first steps in Azure. And we asked ourselves, what is really key to our customers? And what's key to our customers is the data. So we needed to innovate.
When elastic pooling was introduced, we really grabbed onto that possibility and started investigating it right away. And we saw it not only solve our pricing model, but also our performance problems, because we have a data-hungry desktop application. Currently, we have over 12,000 databases running in elastic database pools. We're growing with roughly 1,000 a month. We have a fully automated solution that creates a new database server or a new database pool when needed.
The SQL database team is very open with us. We have discussions on features, and we have discussions on how to use technology. And I think that's something also that's appreciated on both sides.
A prime example was when we were actually over in Redmond. I received a call from a developer back in the Netherlands phoning me about a specific problem. And we were able to get Microsoft to deliver a change in their production environment within 48 hours to solve our problem while we were in Redmond. Now that we have our cloud services running in the cloud, everything we do, every change we make, can potentially be shipped to a customer the next day. When I started out at Snelstart, we delivered our software only once or twice a year. Now we ship our software every 3 weeks. For us, working with Azure means that we can deliver software faster, we can more quickly react to customer demands, and we can scale our solutions whenever demand increases.
By having a cloud solution, letting the deep technology being taken care of by another party, we can achieve so much more just with the team that we have.
I think the main benefit of Azure for Snelstart is the ability to keep focusing on delivering customer value, solving customer problems, instead of worrying about infrastructure.
Dat is Snelstart. En ik werk daar als softwarearchitect. Dat betekent dat ik samen met de teams nadenk over hoe we de dingen bouwen die we willen bouwen. Wil je een vraag? I don't mind. Are there other people in the audience that speak English? Only English? Well, not by my choice. Are there people who object to English? Okay. Well, I'll give it my best. And I try to speak English. I don't do, really. You're welcome. So I work as a software architect, which means that I work with the teams on how to implement the things we want. And I work with the teams, and often they introduce a Boolean, and I get a class hierarchy to solve the same problem. That's what I do. I hope this video leaves you with two questions. The first one being, how did we get, as a company, from being boring, shipping software twice a year to delivering software every 3 weeks, and going from a pure ISV to an online service provider? And the second question might be, do I really wear a suit to work every day? Yes, I do. However, we are not so holding back in our IT. We are really going forward in what we do. What I'm going to do today, what I'm going to tell you about, is a couple of things. I will quickly and shortly go into multi-tenant architectures. I will shortly tell you the Snelstart story. Then I will tell you about the SnailSearch architecture to realize our multi-tenant architecture. Then I will tell you a little bit about Elastic Pools, a technology Microsoft introduced almost a year ago. I will show you a little bit about our lessons learned, our pitfalls, and what we want to do after this. And yes, I realize my slides are in Dutch. Sorry. Multi-tenant architectures. A multi-tenant architecture is, in my opinion, an architecture that is used by multiple customers with completely disjoint domains. So not one hospital, but two hospitals or more, for example. And there are three ways you can create such an architecture. And these different These three types of architectures were not invented by someone. They were observed by Microsoft in the usage of Azure SQL. And the first one is the bottom one, in which I think is the one that most people will start using if they have to build a multi-tenant application. We just put all the data in one database, and we separate it by adding some field on every record. The second model is often something people don't choose. They are forced into. They have that single shared database, and they cannot grow it anymore. And then all of a sudden, they need like a server2.snailstart.nl and have to start routing their customers to the right server. And the third model is what we are using, and according to Microsoft, is a more recent architecture. And that's database per tenant, or database per customer, which means that all the data relating to one customer is in its own database, and the database serves as a really strong boundary between customers. And that's what we are using. And if you want to compare these three, there are two interesting characteristics. The first one is the amount of resource sharing between tenants. If you have a single database, all resources can be used by all tenants. And the more you go up towards database per tenant, the less opportunity is to share resources between databases. Another aspect is the number, the amount of isolation. And the higher you get here, the more isolation you get, especially from a security point of view, that's interesting. In the most ideal case, you want to be in the upper right, because you can distribute resources over your tenants, meeting demand, and you have high isolation. That wasn't possible up to a year ago. So quickly, the SnailStart story. We have been selling software since the 90s, and quite successfully, actually. We had an application, a desktop application. People bought it, people used it, people were happy, and they did their business administration. And their business administration was saved in a database. And if they wanted to use a second business administration, for example, for a holding, that would go into a second database. That's just how plain old SnailStart works. We support two engines, SQL Server and LocalDB, and we're even coming from Microsoft Access. And I think a number of people in the audience are happy that we left that behind. However, there is an interesting thing going on when it comes to bookkeeping. And that is every now and then you need to submit your administration to your bookkeeper or to your accountant, because he has to check things, he has to make some advices, or in the worst case, he has to set up a declaration to go to your bank for financing, for example. And a thing we did, a 90s solution in the 90s, was how about we create a copy-out scenario. A customer can take a part of his administration, save it to a separate file, get it to his accountant, via a floppy at first, or later on via email or WeTransfer, whatever. And then the bookkeeper can do his things and then send it back. Worked like a charm in the 90s. Customers were still happy. However, even our customers found out there was a thing like the internet. And it was a bit old-fashioned to send files over to your bookkeeper and get them back. And bookkeepers didn't want everybody to send their administration 2 days before the year's end. They wanted to work continuously on administrations. So they wanted to start working together. Besides that, our customers started demanding that they could work anytime, anywhere, any place. They wanted their database to be accessible, for example, when they were en route. Those two things together, well, this is, by the way, the picture of what they wanted, forced us to consider a move to the cloud. We were not attracting new customers. Existing customers were leaving, and the average age of our customers started rising. So we tried to launch a new product, a better product in our opinion, a couple of years ago already. However, that failed. Our customers didn't want to migrate to another application. So a new application was not an option. Well, actually, new customers were demanding a web application. So we did something completely different. We said, what if we leave that application on the computer of the customer and we just move the database to the cloud? Then we can access it from multiple desktop applications. People can continue working like they did. And they can also grasp the benefits of the cloud. So said, so done. We did a quick POC. We got a running application, changed the connection string to Azure SQL. Everything worked. It got sold. And then we went into 3 years of development to make it actually work. And in those 3 years, we have built a multi-tenant database per customer architecture. And for us, that really wasn't a choice. For us, we all implicitly had a multi-tenant architecture. It was distributed across 100,000 computers in the Netherlands. However, we actually had one. And we wanted to continue with that because it had a number of advantages we saw. For example, that great customer boundary, which was really important if you have an application that was designed for a single tenant and you transfer it to, for example, a web application, you have to go through the complete application to make sure you do not leak data from one tenant to another, which is really difficult with our application. Another advantage is that we thought we could easily move a tenant from on-premise to the cloud or back at his own discretion, which is really important for us because we have 50,000 customers. And if one of them gets mad, that's a thing. But if 10% of them gets mad, we really have a problem. So we wanted our customers to be able to migrate at their own discretion or not migrate at all if they don't want to. Another thing, capacity management and billing is a bit more easier if you have a large number of users and you can just bill them per database instead of you have to go into the number of invoices or all kinds of things. And finally, your design will be scaled out instead of scale up right from the start. And that's the thing we love in the cloud, because we all know we can keep buying a bigger machine for a while, but at some point, there is no bigger machine. And scale out solves that problem for us. However, there are also two important disadvantages of a database per customer architecture. Didn't matter to us, because we didn't know back then, we just went ahead, but I want to share them with you. The first one is it's a much more time-consuming implementation than a single shared database. You do not have to insert a new row into your tenants table and you're done. You have to provision a database. If you use Elastic Pooling, create a pool, create a database, provide a schema, base records, etc., etc. There's a lot of stuff you have to do when a customer signs up. And there are a lot of these kind of management operations that you have to run when a new tenant comes online. And that's much more involved when you have a database per customer architecture. Another thing, what we found out, is whatever you do, things will take time. Like I said, inserting a record in a database is fast. However, if you ask Microsoft Azure to provision you a new Azure SQL server, you might get an error saying, please try again in 5 minutes, which is really painful if your customer just hit sign up. So that's a thing to consider. And to bring the two parts together, we saw different architectures. We went with database per customer because we had to. So what did we do? We had that existing desktop application that was already capable for selecting different type of storage. And basically, we just extended that with a new type of storage called the online database. And besides that, we started creating services in the cloud. We have called them the SnellStart Services Platform, really original, in short SSP. It was accidentally coined by a developer, and before we knew it, it was on the website. And the Services Platform has a number of responsibilities. It can be used to fetch the list of available administrations and backups for a customer, and he can use it to create, open or close or delete business administrations. Good question. The question was, do we use a database per administration or per customer? I thought I mentioned it in the beginning, but we save one business administration per database. So when a customer creates an administration, indeed, we have to provide what we call a tenant. I will use the terms database and administration through each other. That's just how we do it at SnellStart. I'm really sorry, but I mentioned the same, mean the same thing. And of course, there are two interesting operations. A customer can upload a backup, and he can restore that backup to an administration. Basically, those two combined is the migration to the cloud. This is another view on our architecture. On the left, quite trivial but really important for us, is our existing customer that can continue working with his on-premise database. On the right, we see the SnellStart Services platform that interacts with a number of services in Azure to provide the services I showed you before. Those services are, of course, Azure SQL. And here we interact with the management plane, just not the data plane, but the management plane for creating servers, creating databases, etc. We also interact with the Azure Blob Storage. That's where we store the backups of our customers. They are in backpack format, which makes it more or less easily exchangeable between the different SQL engines. And it means we can use the Azure Backpack service to either restore those backups as a database, meaning an administration, or we can convert an administration into a backup, doing a regular backup operation. And of course, we have one central DB where we keep some metadata. And I know that's a lot of words, so I have decided to throw in some examples on how we upload and restore a backup, both the client-to-server interaction and a bit of code behind. This is a simple sequence diagram of what's happening. We have a customer that wants to upload a backup. And here we encounter an interesting issue. If a customer wants to upload a backup of 2 gigabytes, and he wants to do so at 2 kilobytes per second, he will be snooping at our connections. And if a lot of customers do so, we're in trouble. So we decided to make sure all the requests were quick, fast returning, and we offloaded the risk of slow post to Microsoft Azure. That's what we pay them for. So whenever somebody says, I want to upload a backup, we return a URI pointing to a place in the blob storage with a shared access token, and that customer can upload to there. Then he can call our service, I'm finished, we do some quick checks, and he has uploaded the backup. Of course, there's also a timeout thingy going on somewhere else. Well, once that's done, he can give our services platform the action to restore that backup to an online administration. And what we will do are two things. We will insert an administration entity in our configuration database, so it will show in the list of the customer with a nice pending state. And secondly, we insert a create restore operation entity. And that's it. No queuing. Because what happens on the other side, we have a Azure scheduler that gives off a tick every minute to our worker role. And at that point, our worker role looks at our database and sees which operations are running, inspects their state, and if action is required, tries to make a next step in the process of restoring that backup. Later on, when it comes to best practices, in my opinion, I will tell you why. But that's the approach we've taken here, so no messaging. No queue from the front end to the back end. And this is the code that is involved. I stripped everything that's not really interesting, except for logging, because at 3 o'clock I will be doing a session on logging as well. So, free promo. We do some checks, preliminary. One of them is here, so we can fail fast if needed. And we see that we create that administration and backup restore entity when our customer's request comes in. and we return a pointer to the created administration. This is what's going on the other side. Here we have code that takes all the currently running operations, inspects their state, and if possible, gets it into the next step. And if that step is complete directly, it will try to take another step so we can speed the process up. And why do we do that? Well, there are more steps involved in doing as simple as a backup restore than you think, and than we thought at the start. And there are these. First of all, we're waiting to start. Then we have to create a server if all current servers are full. At that point, we do the restore to the server. We do it as an S100 database, so we can do a fast restore. When the restore, then we start waiting for the completion of the restore, which is an operation you can pull in Azure. When that's complete, we move the database to the Elastic Pool, which is just a command you relay to Azure, which can normally take a few seconds, but can take up to minutes, or sometimes it might fail with a please write, try later. And in the end, we do some authorization and bookkeeping. And this is actually the most simple of our operations. Other operations have much more steps involved. And why we have taken this step-by-step approach instead of having one thread that picks up a message from the queue and processes it until it's done, I will get to later. First, I want to make a small step to Elastic Pools. Because earlier on, I said you want to be in the top right place where you have both high isolation and high resource sharing. And that's possible with the new offering of Microsoft. Well, it's not really new anymore. It just GA'd a couple of months ago, if I'm not mistaken. It's been in public preview since April of 2015. And it allows you to buy a number of databases at once with a shared DTU capacity. Which means that if one of your tenants is really busy, it can suck up all the performance you have if others aren't using it. So within a boundary, you provide customers with the ability to use a lot more performance than without elastic pooling. And as an example, to create acceptable performance for our customers, we would have to buy more or less 100 DTUs per database for peak performance. On the other hand, our customers are using the database only 99 up to the database is idling 99.9% of the time. So we have to buy 100 DTUs and we use 1% or less of it. However, if we buy 100 DTU and we can share it among 200 databases, that's great. And it actually saves us money in the end. To put that a bit more into picture, this is the behavior that you often see when there are only one or two customers interacting with a system. And those peaks are really that high, especially in our application, because it wasn't designed for a shared SQL engine. And that means, in this case, you have to buy 90 DTUs to satisfy the requirements of this user. And the thing is, if we have multiple of these users, we could somehow stack their requests. At no point, we would have to buy more than 90 DTUs. Or even if we make it up to 90 DTUs, if we can spread it among the tenants, is enough. And this is a thing we are heavily using, and really works well for us. When it was introduced, we had to incorporate it into our code, of course, because we do everything automatically. This is actually a bit simplified, but basically that's the code we needed to incorporate elastic pooling. That's not too much. Yeah, I'm not going to share how we do toggling. So instead of just creating a server, we create a server with a pool. And on the first, second last line, you see there is one action that actually creates the pool. For the rest, it's the same code as we use for creating a server. And that call is just a call directly to a Microsoft API. So that's elastic pooling, how we used it, and how we incorporated it into our solution. Some things we learned, and I realized it feels like a couple of open doors, and a number of things you might disagree with, but it's things we learned and work well for us. Really an open door. Don't push state to the client if you don't have to. Keep everything at the server. To start with the first example, we did this wrong the first time. Let me rephrase that. I did that wrong the first time. I thought, to be a clever guy, let's make the client responsible for keeping track of the last push message it has seen and use that token to request new messages. Works like a charm. Until the customer does that one thing he is now able to do, starts using two computers. Or when he reinstalls Windows, he gets all 500 again. So it's a really simple example, but something that really frustrated our customers. And here we should have just gone those few extra miles and done it on the server. Another example, at the start, we used the customer's password and pushed it down. Phone. And we let the customer choose a password and we pushed that password down to the database. So we thought that would be smart. We don't have to handle passwords for the user, right? However, in the end, we changed it and we generated logins and passwords for the customer just in time, at the point in time he wanted to work with the database. And our reasoning was, what if a customer chooses welcome 123 and with 50,000 customers, one of them will, probably more. And the same goes for ABCD. Another thing, and which is more interesting from an architecture point of view, is that we can also, the customer has no idea where his database lives. And we give him just in time the location, the server, and the name of the database. And we know when a customer works in the database, which also means we know when he isn't working in the database, which also means we can move it around when he's not working. So that's another advantage from keeping as much information on the server and not pushing it to the client. Another thing, everybody says it, mind your transient fault handling. And then do some more, I can tell you. We have seen that everything that can be broken will be broken and will be broken often. If you start building and start testing and using Azure, things work great. And if you interact only with the data plane, that will scale to production. However, when you work a lot with the management plane, things will start timing out, taking minutes, taking hours. You're thinking they're started, they're not started. You hit a glass ceiling, all of a sudden, boop, too many requests, try again in an hour. That's really painful if you're in production with a couple thousand customers. And another thing we saw is that it happens really frequent, especially delays, try again in a minute. And what we did was, first of all, we tried our operations. We built them for retry. We used messaging from the front end to the back end. The back end picked up a message, started processing it. And after 15 minutes, he came onto a step which didn't succeed. The message was dropped. 15 minutes later, another worker tried it again, which created a lot of waiting time for the customer because you're retrying the whole operation. Secondly, you start tripping over artifacts that were created the first time around. So you have to redesign for idempotency and reentrancy. So if half an administration was restored, you have to clean it up before you can do a retry. And all these steps made that these operations took really long. And we designed completely different, like I showed earlier, to process things step by step. And we retry only one step. And we do not have threads busy pulling Azure. We just, every now and then, look at all our operations and see what is needed to get them on. That's a thing that really works for us. And in length of that, normally you use a queue for transmitting work from the web role to the worker role. It's a highly recommended pattern. It works great. I think using Azure Storage, you can do something like 7,000 messages from the front end to the back end, 10,000 messages, and you can dequeue them 16 at a time, somewhere there. So it's great, offers great scalability. However, it also has a number of disadvantages. It's really difficult to see what work you have on a queue. If there are 100 messages, is that 100 times 10 seconds work? Or is that 100 times 10 minutes work? And even worse, you cannot see which messages your workers are working on currently and why it is taking so long. You cannot change messages often after you send them, and you're dependent on the retry mechanism that the queue offers you. So what we did, we used a database for syncing between producers and consumers for work, which is completely different and doesn't scale that well. But we don't process 7,000 messages a second. If we have a couple of 10 a minute, it's a good minute. So that's way good enough for us. And let's face it, often you use a secondary store already to save more information about your message. We have that high visibility, and we can even add data to a message, for example. So that's a number of things we learned while implementing our services. So, where do we go from here? I started out with we cannot create a web application because our customers don't want to migrate. However, we have migrated their database. Well, actually, we have given them the option to migrate their database at their discretion. And now that we have the database in the cloud, we can finally do what we already wanted. We can create a web application. We are also working on business-to-business integrations. So that's a number of things we are doing in the future, which are possible because of what we've done in the past. Nice on time. What I want to say finally is that there are a number of ways you can build a multi-tenant application. We had no choice. Maybe you might. I'm a great fan of the model we've used. It works great for us, especially the way we can migrate individual customers easily back and forth to the cloud is a real benefit for us. And one thing you might have noticed is that I didn't say too much about SQL databases. I didn't even use the word DBA, which is in the title of this presentation. The thing is, we don't need them. We have 15,000 databases running in Azure. I think 15,000 and a half. And tomorrow, or in a couple of days, we will hit 16,000. We have no database administrators at Snellstart. Everything is taken care of for us. And we are really happy with the solution we've chosen. And I hope I've shared a couple of things with you that you can use in your own work. We'll finishing early. Probably I'm speaking too fast. In English. There is one thing I was requested to do, to invite you all to submit your feedback on this session using the app. What I would love myself is for you to come towards me and provide your feedback. This was the first time for me, so I'm really curious about what you think of this session, thought of this session. And you can approach me here up to 1:45. You can also, we can also have a plenary questions if you want. And afterwards, I have to make room for the next speaker, and you can walk with me to the expert lounge, which I'm still looking to find. Thank you. Are there any questions? Yes. Interesting question. The question is, how do we manage schemas? And how do we roll out updates to that schema? There are facilities in Azure to push queries to a lot of databases, for example, Elastic Database queries. You can also make something yourself. We don't. Because we have that existing desktop application that already had schema management in a truly particular way, But it really works. And because we still have the desktop application managing the database itself, because it requests a connection string from the services and then directly connects to the database, it's still under control of the desktop application. However, we are moving to web applications, and from there we are currently doing it when the database is opened. And currently that still works, but we have to wait and see what happens if databases start growing. If that migration gets too slow, we will start looking probably at Elastic Database queries. Does that answer? Anyone else? Yes, ma'am. Even better question. The question is the database schema the same for all databases? I wish. We have 55,000 customers, and all the data is stored in a relational database that every developer can access within a couple of seconds. So there are a lot of developers creating plugins, add-ons, single executables on the desktop that do something for our customer. And they add a table, they change a column length. So there are up to 200,000 variations on our schema, but they all adhere to some specific requirements. So there is a big challenge there. Does that answer your question? The difficult, yeah, but we have 25 years let's not call it legacy, 25 years of successful history to work with. No, but of course, it's something of the past, but we must not forget that our customers are happy with the current solution. We are building this towards the future, and we have to deal with past choices that were made in a past where they seemed right. Yes. Yes. Good question. The question is, how do we cope with latency and bandwidth limitations? First of all, we advise our customers to only move over when they have a fiber connection with a gigabit connection and no latency, of course. However, if they ignore that and they go with a slower connection, they might experience a slowdown comparing to an on-premise application. A number of parts of the application are really slow when working with an online database. And we are actually rebuilding them, focusing on query execution time and latency. And latency meaning we have to do one round trip, maybe two, but not 40. Because the application was built on top of a database that was on the local machine. So there is some re-engineering in the application itself going on as well. And the question is, if we are making that it's the customer's problem, yes and no. We are actively working on reducing that problem, so we are definitely addressing it. We have recently rebuilt something called reading bank statements, so they are translated to journaling entries in your administration. And we've taken that from a couple of minutes down to 4 seconds from a desktop application with an online database and a fairly large business administration. So we're actively working there. And there are still scenarios where the customer is better off on-premise. That's correct. And that's why we leave it at their discretion to migrate or not. Because I can imagine a number of our customers will not migrate. And that's their choice, and we will keep supporting that. Yes, sir. I'm just thinking what can I say and what can't I say. For us, it's really straightforward. Because of that low utilization of a database. Because in general, there are one, maybe two or three users on the database. So we see long periods of idling. So we just put as much as we can into one pool. However, there are all kinds of interesting scenarios that you can imagine playing with this. For example, if you have premium customers that want to pay more, You can put them in another pool and give them more capacity or less tenants in the pool. Or when you have something like trials, you just put them all there, give them a little bit of capacity, and you'll see how they will react. Or you take those trials and you give them great performance, and then when they start paying, you give them lower performance. We don't do that, but you could. So there are scenarios there, but for us, utilization is so low, we basically put as much in a pool as we can. Let's go to the back. The question is if we are using any partitioning strategies. And what do you mean by partitioning? Do you mean like SQL partitioning, or you mean, for example, how do we go with cleaning in the desktop application? Well, that's not really related anymore to the topic of today. But basically, there is only a requirement to keep 7 years of data from the tax administration. So most people just throw it away. What they don't have, they can't get fined on. And secondly, the evidence turns around after those 7 years. And secondly, what was I trying to say? It doesn't really matter. If you have a couple thousand invoices in a database and you have a well-designed schema, so we don't partition over tables or there's no active archiving or anything going on. There was a gentleman in the middle. Actually, I'm not going to answer that question because we are working with the product teams because we are, from some points of view, an interesting customer, and there is a lot of things I know, and I'm not really clear on what's NDA and what not. So I can look it up and get back to you. You can work with me if you want, but I cannot answer it on the spot, especially not with the camera on. I cannot afford a mistake. Sorry. Sir. For primary service, no. And the rest, I'll rather keep to myself. But we are, of course, into things like disaster recovery and thinking about that. We promise our customers that stuff will be in West Europe. And we rely on Microsoft to do what they say. And but we do manage where we put stuff in Azure, yes. I had one final question. No, definitely not. So. Yeah, the services we provide on accessing a database, on accessing an administration, are the same for all customers. And we are also working on business logic as a service, web application, for example. And they're also the same use cases for all customers. And if they want to do like custom weight work for a while, they're going to be stuck on premise. I think I'm going to wrap it up. Thank you for your attention, and have a great day.
We haven't time to ask a question. But you are going to create a web application on top of, and you have a lot of databases for each customer. You have different schemas. So, but you basically have the same business logic. So, how are you going to build on top of?
Really.
Thank you.